Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Coming up later this hour, Governor Cuomo will join us on the phone for a few minutes. Even though we're here live in the green space, that one's going to be on the phone, folks. We couldn't get him to come down at the last minute from Albany. But I think there's a lot to talk about. So we'll have the governor on the phone for a little while, and we'll have Arturo O'Farrell, the great pianist and composer and band leader. He's going to play for us. He's going to talk about his amazing project in the Tijuana area called Fandango at the Wall, which was like 60 musicians playing, some of them on either side of the U.S.-Mexico border, and did that a few months ago. But how relevant is that for right now, right? We had Arturo O'Farrell already scheduled for today for weeks and weeks, and Fandango at the Wall couldn't be more relevant, unfortunately, right at this moment. So that's coming up. And right now, global affairs expert Ian Bremmer with us live in the green space. Ian has been with us on the show many times. He has his own public affairs TV series these days, G-Zero World, with Ian Bremmer on public television, Saturday mornings locally on Channel 13. G-Zero is his term for a world with no dominant superpower. He is chairman of the Eurasia Group, which measures political risks around the world for investors. And every January, Ian and his team publish a list of the biggest political risks that they predict could play out over the coming year. Last year, we began our conversation after President Trump and North Korean President Kim Jong-un went back and forth over whose nuclear button was bigger. That situation actually seems to be okay for the moment. But this year, well, let's find out. Hi, Ian. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good to be back with you, Brian.
And by the way, listeners, when we're in the green space, you can watch the show as well as listen. So if you want to see live streaming video of me with Ian Bremmer right now, you can do that on our webpage, WNYC.org, or on our Twitter feed, or on the WNYC Facebook page. So first, to start on the news, how are you assessing the government shutdown in terms of economic risks? Does it register?
A little bit. I think it registers more in terms of the impact of these tens of thousands of folks that are actually getting furloughed, the impact on daily lives. I mean, you know that the global unemployment in the United States right now is at historic lows. And in fact, the best news last week was that it went up from 3.7 to 3.9%, because a lot of people are that were out of the search market are now coming back. And those people are not only getting hired, but they're getting retrained. And a lot of them are over 50 years old. And so frankly, I mean, this is economically so far this year has been comparatively a good news story, but that is not exactly consolation to those people in the U.S. government that aren't going to see a paycheck tomorrow.
And of course, the stock market has been bouncing around wildly. Trump says it's only from the Fed raising interest rates. Do you see it in more global terms?
Sure. I think there's a lot of volatility in the markets because on the one hand, global growth is reasonably robust. We expect near 4% growth this year, as we did last year. But people are worried. They're worried about a trade war between the U.S. and China, which I'm not particularly worried about. But they're also worried about all of these things geopolitically and politically at home and in the domestic environments of many of our allies that do seem to be coming off the rails. I mean, if you look at the political environment globally, you have to recognize it's not really sustainable. And we talk about it as geopolitical climate change. It may not be urgent, but it's obviously a problem, and it's starting to spook the markets a bit.
You said you don't expect a trade war between the United States and China?
Correct.
Why not?
Well, look, it's very clear. First of all, the United States markets are down some 10-15% from the peak. In China, it's more like 25%. Neither leader wants to go into second quarter with worse headwinds against them economically. So they are incented to get to yes. Furthermore, if anyone that's been watching what Trump has had to say about Xi Jinping knows that he has been consistently positive about the Chinese president. He clearly wants to show that China's a tough nut to crack, but I, President Trump, am the guy to do it. So I would be stunned if on March 1st, the deadline that was announced by the U.S., if we were to move towards a 25% tariff across the board on Chinese exports. I'm pretty convinced that will not happen. So that's not a trade war, and the markets will respond positively to that. But let's be clear, compartmentalizing a win between the U.S. and China on trade does not mean that on March 2nd, the Chinese stop stealing American intellectual property. Does not mean we suddenly don't have a problem with Huawei, that the Chinese aren't building an alternative 5G system that they're going to roll out in 2020. Doesn't mean we don't have problems on South China Sea or Taiwan. The broader structural relationship between the U.S. and China is actually heading in a more challenging direction.
It is on your top 10 list of political risks for this year, which also includes anti-democracy, bad seeds being planted around the world, the gloves coming off on cyber war, but U.S.-China trade is high on that list.
U.S.-China relations are high on that list. Yes, not U.S.-China trade, but the broader, look, it's the, these are the two most important countries in the world, they're the two largest economies. So the fact that that relationship is growing more challenging across the board, despite an agreement that will paper it over, the agreement that we're going to see that comes over the next couple of months is like putting some spackle on structural challenges in your house. I mean, the next time there's a major storm, that you're going to see that nothing was really fixed. That's the problem here.
I will say, Green Space audience, raise your hand if you have a question for Ian Bremmer, but that we will give first priority to a certain segment of our Green Space audience today. If they happen to have any questions, we have a global affairs class from Morristown Beard High School here. And not to put you on the spot, you will not be graded on this, at least not by me. But if any of you from Morristown Beard has a question for Ian Bremmer, do we have one already? We'll give you guys first priority, and let's take one right now. Hi there.
Hi. First, I'm really excited to be here. Thank you for taking my question. And basically, is the concerns over a no-deal Brexit, is that somewhere on your list? I'm more concerned about, especially if they fall out of the EU, what kind of America's reaction to that will be? How will that affect the market? I mean, obviously, the markets will probably not react favorably to that, but more specifically, what companies might fall?
Look, the Brits have already lost about 15,000 jobs in the financial industry since the Brexit referendum vote occurred 2.5 years ago. That's not a disaster for the British economy, but it's not good. There's a recent survey in the last week that says about $1 trillion in assets, money managers and other financial institutions say they'll move out because of Brexit. That's more significant, but we don't have an outcome yet. And although a no-deal Brexit, where they're left in the cold and just have the World Trade Organization, is increasingly possible, it's also increasingly possible that we have a second referendum. And if that were to happen, the Brits would likely vote to stay in. And so we can pretend that the last 2.5 years were just the most extraordinary own goal that we've ever seen in a major advanced industrial democracy that frankly makes the United States look almost functional from a political perspective. And we should all appreciate that. It is on the list. But the funny thing is, for the first time since I started the firm 21 years ago, it's not ranked as one of the top 10 risks. It's instead an asterisk. And it's because we're being honest that we don't know. And in fact, we're saying something strong in that. We're saying that anyone that tells you they know is lying to you, including the British Prime Minister. It really could go in any direction, 2019.
Let's take another question here in the green space. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for your opportunity to ask you a question today. So one of the risks you talked about was international security and stability. So my question is, what do you see as the greatest technological risk to international stability within the next 10 or so years?
When we go out the next 10 years, I think the big problem is that we're moving from a global system where everyone was aligned with one set of technological standards to a global system that will be split in two. When you talk about artificial intelligence, there are big companies in the United States that are driving deep learning and driving how we assess big data, driving surveillance, all of that. It's Google, and it's Amazon, and it's Facebook, and it's Microsoft. And in China, they're completely different companies. It's Alibaba and it's Tencent. And the fact is that those companies increasingly are not working with each other. One of the reasons I'm optimistic about U.S.-China trade, especially in the near term, is that we need each other. It's that American companies are manufacturing in China and they're exporting those products to the United States, and the Chinese want to send a lot of goods to the Americans, and we want to buy a lot of cheap goods from China. That's just the reality, even though it displaces some workers. But, and I'm not saying that doesn't matter, but the fact is that we need each other. Where when you look at the developments in technology in the next 10 years, we're moving into a system where we don't need each other, where it feels more like an arms race. And if right now it already means that Chinese investment in Silicon Valley is way off and increasingly American tech investment in China is going down, soon I think you'll move to a situation where Chinese students increasingly aren't studying in those fields in the United States, a whole new generation. That's obviously a major danger in the way we think about the world and the world economy.
What about the one on your list that is taking the gloves off regarding cyber war? What does that refer to?
Yeah, it clearly cyber attacks are getting worse, and you would have been worried about that irrespective of anything specific to 2019. But in 2019, two additional things are happening. First, let's remember that when the Russians hit the American elections under Obama, Obama was very aware of what happened, but didn't really want to respond very hard because he was concerned about escalation. The Trump administration has decided they really want to try to push harder on cyber deterrence, and they are moving towards allowing Cyber Command and the Department of Defense to engage in preemptive strikes against would-be adversaries on cyber. I think the potential that creates an escalatory cycle is real. I also think we have to recognize that as the Mueller investigations come to fruition, as well as the investigations here in the Southern District of New York, we're going to have a lot of information about people that are very close to Putin, his inner circle, that have been working with Americans and trying to go after our democracy. And when that happens, Congress is going to hit the Russians back. And when that happens, the Russians are going to be angry. The Russians have the greatest capacity on cyber to hit us, and they're also the least risk averse. So clearly 2019, if you were to tell me, I don't think we're heading for war. I don't think we're heading for any major sudden crisis this year. But if I were to wake up and you were to tell me, Ian, oh my God, you won't believe, we are in serious trouble. My guess would be that is a Russian attack on cyber that hit our critical infrastructure. That would be the single thing I'd be most worried about.
Huh. And what about impeachment in terms of global implications? If that were to come about, and of course, remember, Hillary Clinton wouldn't become president, Mike Pence would become president. But what do you see as the biggest global implications if that were to happen?
Well, I mean, honestly, I think the likelihood of not just impeachment in the House, which could easily happen, but for it to be confirmed in the Senate that's controlled by the Republicans, I think is an extremely low likelihood. It's not on the list. But the United States at home, as you imply, is on the list. And it wasn't last year. You and I talked about this in January, and I said, red herring. Trump's going to tweet a lot. He's going to say a lot of crazy things. But actually, there's no real risk to American institutions at home. And that indeed was the case in 2018. 2 years in, American institutions have stood up quite well, despite everything Trump's had to say. 2019, I'd like to be able to say that's still true. It's harder to. We have to admit that American political institutions this year will be tested in ways that have not occurred in our lifetimes. That as these investigations go after Trump's family, his wealth, and his person, the three things he cares most about, right? He's going to react. He's going to hit back. And everything we know about Trump is when he hits back, he's not necessarily constrained by what previous presidents have done. And that's going to test. It's going to test the media. It's going to test Congress. And perhaps most importantly, it's going to test our judiciary. Now, I believe that when that happens, our institutions will stand up to it. But I can't tell you sitting here in front of you today that I feel 100% confident in that. And as a consequence of that, the United States domestically is actually a risk. I think we could see some permanent erosion to our institutions as a consequence of that.
We just have a minute left. Let's use it to take one more question from our Morristown Beard High School Global Affairs class group. Hi there.
Hi. Do you think that it's possible that in the coming years, companies such as Google and Facebook could be broken up by antitrust laws? And if so, what impacts would that have on the global economy?
I have a hard time imagining that they would be broken up with existing antitrust laws. But I think we have to recognize that there is a backlash, a tech lash, against these companies and what their business models represent for liberal democracy in terms of their treatment of bots, for example, and the way that algorithms are treating us as products is a problem. The Europeans are way in front of this compared to the Americans. They are a regulatory superpower in terms of their common market, and their bureaucrats are really good at this. Anyone that saw Zuckerberg in Congress recognizes that our senators and representatives don't really understand things like the Facebook as well. But no, this is a problem. But I have to tell you, if you only see it in terms of big, bad American monopolies, you're only seeing half of the story. I recognize that these companies are promoting addictive behavior, and they are bad for us as citizens and clearly bad for our kids. And yet, if I look at the fact that the Chinese have monopolies in these same fields that they are supporting and promoting, from a Chinese perspective, I, as an American, will say, wait a second, I need to make sure that these companies are actually robust and can promote the American national interest. And how you square those competing interests is one of the most challenging problems that are in front of our government officials going forward. I wish I said I could tell you I had a good answer for you.
Please thank Ian Bremmer, host of G-Zero World, nationwide on public television, Saturday mornings on Channel 13 here in New York. He's chairman of the Eurasia Group, which measures political risks around the world for investors. And every January, he releases his forecast of political risks for that year. Thank you for coming on for, I think it's about the 10th January in a row, Ian. Thank you very much.
It's a solid decade. Thank you, Brian.